but suspected that it would be nothing next to his losing Jetta. This loss, he feared, was one he would not recover from. Made irritable by the thought, he pulled his door open and scowled at the knocker. When Ollie realized it was Alec, his scowl merely deepened. "Where the devil have ye been?" Eyes widening with surprise, his younger brother frowned.
"Did Rory no tell ye? I went to see Sade and Greer."
"Aye, he told me," Ollie admitted. "But that was 2 weeks ago. What the devil took ye so long?"
"They were away when I arrived at MacDonald," he explained. "Off visiting Niels and Edith on their way north, so I rested overnight at MacDonald and then followed them to Drummond. But by the time I arrived, they'd left Drummond for Carmichael to see Dougal and Maureen. Well," he said with apparent exasperation, "of course Edith insisted I rest the night before continuing on, and..."
Ollie listened absently to his brother's long, drawn-out explanation. Or perhaps he didn't really listen at all. Mostly he was wondering to himself if Jetta would like Edith, Maureen, Joe, and Sade. His sister was thick as thieves with her friends, which was a good thing since two of them were now married to two of his brothers. But he suspected Jetta would like them. She'd probably like their friend Joe, too, and fit in easily with a group of women. And they, of course, would love her, he decided. She was clever and sweet, with a wonderful sense of humour. How could they help but love her? They couldn't, Ollie decided firmly, and returned his attention to his brother as he concluded,
"We finally caught up with them as they returned home to MacDonald, but the minute I finished explaining about Jetta, Sade insisted on heading here. Of course, she first had to pack fresh clothes, and Greer had to take care of some business, so we did not leave right away, but finally, here we are."
Alec finished. "Here you are," Ollie agreed, dryly. "But why are you knocking on my door so early in the morning?" Alec grimaced.
"Well, you ken what Sade is like. She was threatening to come up here and wake you herself, but I thought it best to warn you first."
"Warn me a what?" Ollie asked with grim suspicion.
"Oh,
Ollie narrowed his eyes. "You did not just tell her we rescued the lass from the water, did you?" he accused. "What else did you tell her?" Alec grimaced.
"I did not mean to tell her anything. It just slipped out."
Snorting with disgust, Ollie turned and strode back across his room to snatch up his plaid and began pleating it. "What does she ken?"
Well,
Alec hesitated and licked his lips nervously as he watched Ollie finish his pleating and then don the plaid and fasten it in place. "Well," Ollie prompted, turning to spear his brother with a look. Alec winced and then admitted apologetically,
"Everything."
"Damn you, Alec," Ollie growled and strode past him to head out of the room.
"Well, you ken how she can be," Alec muttered, hard on his heels. "Once Sade knew about Jetta, she insisted on picking at me until she got every last detail."
Ollie snorted, knowing it wouldn't have taken all that much picking to get Alec to talk. The lad gossiped like an old woman.
"But 'tis fine," Alec assured him. "'Tis no like you're doing anything wrong. You saved the lass's life and you're taking care of her, nursing her back to health yourself and everything. I told Sade how you'd been feeding her and entertaining her and not left her side. I'm sure she's just curious."
"Aye," Ollie muttered dryly, not believing that for a second. He didn't doubt for a minute that it was more than mere curiosity. His sister was here to ask him questions he had no desire to answer, or even think about. Things like why had he not tried harder to find out who Jetta might be and where she belonged or who her family was? And how and when did he intend to tell Jetta that they were not really husband and wife? Cursing under his breath,
Ollie straightened his shoulders as he descended the stairs. His sister could be a royal pain when she wanted to be, and he suspected she would want to be in this case. She was a protector by nature, standing up for others and fighting for their rights whenever she felt it necessary. He had no doubt she would feel the right thing to do here was tell Jetta everything and do all they could to find out who she was and where she belonged. The problem was, he wasn't eager to do that. He knew he should be. He even felt he should be, but he didn't want to. Besides, doing so might endanger the women. They needed to find out what the situation was before they even considered revealing to her family that she was alive. Which meant finding out who she was and where she was from. Something he hadn't managed to do so far, he admitted guiltily. The guilt was because he hadn't really tried all that hard. While there not being a ship that sank was a stumbling block, there were other ways to find out where she came from and what her name was. He simply hadn't bothered to try any of them. And why hadn't he done that? Because Ollie liked Jetta. He liked talking to her, and he liked the way she looked at him. There was no fear or revulsion in her expression when she peered at his face. It was as if it wasn't just her memory she'd lost, but her vision as well. And Ollie had even suspected that was the case until Rory had tested her vision and assured him that she saw just fine. So she simply didn't appear to be horrified by the scar on his face. Which was a miracle, to his mind. The woman was beautiful and grew more so every day as she regained some of the weight she'd lost while unconscious. And she seemed to like him. To truly like him.
What are you doing to find Jetta's people and learn her real name and situation?
Ollie tore himself from his thoughts and scowled at his sister at that question. He hadn't even reached the table and she was already on her feet and marching toward him, grilling him like he was a naughty lad up to mischief. Which was exactly what he'd expected. He supposed it was good that he knew her so well.
And good morn to ye too, sister. I hope your journey here was uneventful.
Ollie said mildly as he reached her and bent to press a kiss to her cheek. Straightening, he then offered a nod of greeting to her husband, Greer MacDonald, who was still seated at the trestle tables, chewing on a pastry. The sight made his stomach growl with hunger.
Ollie?
Sade said in warning, dragging his attention back to her.
Alex said the girl does not remember a thing and thinks you're married and that she sleeps in your bed with you. How could you take advantage of the lass like that, you?
I suggest you stop there ere you say something we shall both regret,
Ollie said coldly, interrupting her diatribe. She did stop, but she also eyed him with anger and disappointment. Ignoring that for a moment, he turned to scowl at Alec and said,
You did not bother to mention that I'm sleeping on a pallet on the floor while Jetta occupies my bed.
How could I tell her that?
Alec asked with surprise.
I didn't ken it.
Ollie blinked at the claim and then frowned as he realized he hadn't really discussed the sleeping arrangement with anyone but Rory. Actually, he hadn't discussed much of anything with anyone since Jetta had arrived. He'd been at the lodge with her for weeks, passing the hours at her bedside. At first just watching her sleep and looking for any sign she might wake. Once she did wake, he'd then spent his time at her side, plying her with food and drink and answering her questions about Buchanan and its people, as she tried to find memories of her life and the people in it that simply didn't exist.
So you've not taken advantage?
Sade asked.
Of course not.
Ollie snapped, turning his attention to Sade again and noting the relief rushing over her. Rather than being pleased that she believed him, Ollie was actually even more annoyed at this proof that she'd thought so poorly of him. Forget that he'd come quite close to taking advantage of Jetta a time or two. The fact was, he hadn't. And wouldn't, and Sade should know that.
You ken me, Sade, he said grimly. How could you think for a minute that I'd take advantage of a wee beautiful lass in such a sad state?
Well, I did not at first,
she assured him apologetically.
But Alec said...
Ollie waved away her words and moved around her to settle at the table and pour himself some cider. He'd barely finished the task when a tray with several pastries on it was set before him. Taking one of the still warm treats, he popped it in his mouth and began to chew.
I'm sorry, Ollie,
Sade said on a sigh, settling next to him and placing a hand on his arm.
I do ken better than that. I should have realized Alec had it all wrong. He usually does.
Hey, Alec protested.
I was no wrong.
Exactly.
I said she was in his bed, and she is. I just did not ken he was on the floor rather than in bed with her. And she does think he's her husband,
he pointed out.
Aye, about that,
Sade murmured and arched her eyebrows at him. She came to that conclusion herself when she first woke, Ollie said. She thought only a husband would be in her bedroom. She was even dismayed to have Rory in there, despite his being a healer. And Rory suggested we no correct her. He does not wish us to upset her any more than necessary, lest we set back her healing.
Aye, Alec explained that,
Sade said diffidently.
But surely she's past the delicate stage now, and could be told. Do you no think?
Rory thinks not, he said with a shrug. You shall have to talk to him about that.
Very well.
Sade patted his arm gently as if she thought he needed soothing, and then she cleared her throat and said,
And what of finding her family?
Ollie stiffened and then turned to glare at Sade's husband, Greer, as if her words were somehow his brother-in-law's fault. Do not look at me that way, the MacDonald said dryly, and then pointed out. She is your sister and was full grown when I met her. I did no make her this way, I just love her the way she is. Clucking with disgust at the soft sentiment, Ollie picked up his cider and took a swig.
Ollie!
Sade said firmly.
What have you done about trying to find out who she is and where she comes from?
I told her that you sent us out to ask about what ship might have sunk in that storm. Alec assured him quickly, and then turned to Sade and reminded her.
And I told you as far as anyone knew, none had. Aye, at that time, mayhap,
Sade said solemnly.
But have you sent men to ask since? Surely someone will realize by now that her ship did not arrive where it was headed.
Ollie turned another glare on Alec, and the younger man made a face.
I did try to tell you about that too, Sade,
Alec said with disgust.
I tried to tell you that ere I left Buchanan, Geordie and Conran had headed out to try again. And?
Sade asked, spearing Ollie with her eyes.
What happened?
Still no news of a ship that sank, Ollie growled.
Then mayhap the ship did not sink,
Sade said at once.
Alec did mention that there was no debris in the water besides the mast. Mayhap the mast was claimed by the storm, but the ship survived.
She looked so damn pleased with herself at the suggestion that Ollie almost felt bad for the pleasure it gave him to say,
That thought had occurred to me, Sade, and I did plan to send Conran and Geordie out again, eventually. But Geordie is no likely to want to leave Katie just now, and Conran is away at the moment.
Then send someone else, she said at once. One of the soldiers can ask questions as easily as Geordie and Conran.
Nay, Ollie said abruptly as Rory approached the table.
Why not?
She demanded. The situation is much too tricky to trust to just anyone, Sade. Rory explained when Ollie couldn't be bothered to, and then frowned and asked, Did Alec no tell you that there is some concern for the lass's life?
Aye. He mentioned that she said something about a cat, a white lady and a betrothed who wasn't a betrothed who would kill her.
Sade admitted, and then added,
But since none of that makes any sense, is it not possible that was just a fever dream she was telling you about?
Ollie stiffened at the suggestion. It was not something he'd considered, and it did seem possible. But after contemplating it briefly, he shook his head.
It matters little. She was terrified at the mention of her family, and I'll no risk returning her to people who might be sending her to death. Eyeing her coldly, he added, And ye should no expect me to. Ye certainly did not wish us to send Maureen back to her brother, or leave Edith to the care of her murderous family.
That was different,
Sid said at once.
Was it? Her husband asked gently.
Biting her lip uncertainly, Sid turned to peer at Greer and asked,
You think she really may have a family like Maureen or Edith's?
Greer considered the matter and then said,
I think Ollie is right to move cautiously here until we ken if that is no the case for this poor lass. It would be a shame if he and Alec rescued her and then he and Rory put such time and care into healing her, only to hand her over to a family who would see her dead anyway.
Sid's shoulders slumped slightly as she released a sigh, and then she turned to peer at Ollie for a moment before finally saying,
Well then, we shall have to figure out a way to find out who she is without giving away that she is here until we ken that is safe to do so.
Ollie merely grunted and picked up a pastry. It was exactly what he'd been saying. He bit into his pastry with a little sigh of pleasure.
I would like to meet her, Sid announced, standing up. I presume she is up in your room.
Shaking his head, Ollie swallowed the food in his mouth, intending to answer, but Rory did it first.
She is still at the lodge.
You left her alone when she may have a murderous family out to get her?
She asked with dismay.
She's no alone. Uncle Acre and a retinue of soldiers are there with her, as is Mavis. Besides, her family do not ken she's there, Ollie said at once. They can't. We do not even ken who they are, he pointed out with exasperation. Besides, I could no bring her back. She has no clothes.
Oh, aye,
Sid said, her expression clearing.
Alec mentioned that.
Ollie was just relaxing again when she suddenly nodded and headed for the keep doors.
Well, that can be fixed quickly enough. We brought some dresses for her. I'll head to the lodge now and give them to her. That way I can meet her too.
Men!
Greer barked, grabbing several pastries to take with him as he got to his feet. Ollie raised his eyebrows as a dozen MacDonald soldiers immediately stood at the far end of the trestle tables and started to follow their lady. Turning his gaze back to his brother-in-law, he asked,
Is there something you've no told us?
Greer paused and glanced to him in question.
What do you mean? Well, 'tis not a long trip. You really do not need your men to ride to the lodge and back, he pointed out. Is someone out to harm me sister? Again. Oh, he smiled. Nay, the men are needed to drive and guard the wagons with the chests of dresses in them.
The MacDonald hurried off then, leaving Ollie just staring after him.
Just how many chests and wagons are there? He muttered to himself.
6 chests, 3 wagons,
Alec answered, bringing Ollie's head around his way.
6?
He asked with disbelief. The younger man clucked his tongue with disgust.
I knew you were no listening to me up in your room when I was telling you of my trials trying to find Sid.
6,
Ollie repeated.
I told you, he said with exasperation. I just missed Sid and Greer when I got to MacDonald. They'd already left to see Niels and Edith at Drummond, but they were gone from there too when I reached Drummond. They'd left there for Carmichael to see Dougal and Maureen. But I stopped the night at Drummond, and when Edith heard about poor wee Jetta, she decided she'd send some dresses and managed to fill a whole chest for me to take,
he explained.
She even gave me a wagon to harness to my horse to cart it in. Of course, dragging the wagon with the chest in it slowed me down further, and by the time I got to Carmichael, Sid and Greer had already left there as well. They were headed for Sinclair. I stayed the night at Carmichael, and when Maureen heard Jetta's sad tale, she filled a chest for me to take in the wagon too. And then,
Let me guess. Ollie interrupted dryly. Sid and Greer had already left Sinclair by the time you got there too, but Joe and Campbell Sinclair insisted you stay the night, heard the tale and gave you a chest as well.
Three chests?
Alec corrected him, his expression grim.
Three?
Ollie echoed with surprise.
Aye, one with dresses in it and two with bolts of fabric she thought Jetta might use to make gowns in a fashion she preferred.
He explained and then added with disgust.
I needed a bigger wagon and another horse to help pull it, and now I was going ridiculously slowly.
Aye, I can imagine. Ollie growled.
My next stop was MacDonald again, where I finally caught up with Sid and Greer, and she supplied a chest of dresses as well, but they decided on three mid-sized carts rather than the large one in hopes we could travel more quickly.
So you went all the way up to Sinclair, Ollie muttered, shaking his head.
I have been everywhere this past week,
Alec said with disgust, and then accused him.
You truly did not listen to a word I said in your bedchamber, did you?
Ollie stared at him for a minute, and then, rather than answer the question, growled,
And you told all of them about Jetta?
Alec said weakly.
Well,
Ollie closed his eyes. I suspect that means we'll be having more company within the week, Rory put in, sounding cheerful.
More like within the next hour,
Alec said apologetically.
They were all eager to come meet Jetta and sent messengers to MacDonald yesterday with news they'd be arriving at Buchanan this morning. 'Tis why we left so early. Sid wanted to be here to greet him.
God's teeth, Ollie muttered with disgust. His home was about to be invaded by three more, very beautiful, very kind, and very sweet, busybodies who would help his sister interfere horribly in his life. He thought, and then frowned as a thought struck him. Scowling at Alec, he asked shortly,
If Edith gave you a chest of damned dresses, why did you not return to Buchanan then? Why continue to hunt down Sid? The dresses were what were wanted.
Aye, but I kenned you'd want Sid and the others here for the wedding.
He pointed out, as if that should be obvious, and then added,
Finding them all now saved me having to find them later.
What wedding?
Ollie asked with bewilderment.
Yours? To Jetta? I felt sure you'd want to marry her now that you've taken her to your bed.
I didn't take her. She is alone in my bed, Ollie growled furiously. Her honour is safe.
Aye, but no one else kens that, and she's obviously a noble lady. You can't just tell her you're her husband, let people think you've bedded her and then not marry her. She's ruined now whether you've slept with her or no,
he pointed out, and Ollie suddenly understood. Alec had continued to hunt Sid because it allowed him to call in reinforcements. The rest of the family had been dragged into it to force him to marry Jetta if he didn't agree to do so willingly. Dear God. They would force Jetta to marry him whether she wanted to or not if he didn't do something to prevent it. Glancing toward the keep doors, Ollie stood abruptly, thinking only that he needed to beat Sid to the lodge, collect Jetta, and flee. Where to, he didn't know. But fleeing was the only way to save her from being forced to marry him when she might not want to.
Did you no mention to me last night that you wanted to question the men who were on the gate about what they may or may not have seen when Katie was shot with the arrow?
Rory asked solemnly. Ollie paused and turned to him with a scowl. Leave it to Rory to be his conscience. His younger brother had been doing that for the last 5 weeks when it came to his interactions with Jetta, and he was growing heartily sick of it. Besides, that was before he'd learned the four horsewomen of the apocalypse were about to descend on him. Well, three, he supposed. One of them was already here.
Sid loves you, Rory said solemnly. So do Maureen and Edith, and Joe likes you too. And all four of them are kind.
They'll no harm Jetta or do anything to hurt you. He allowed that to sink in and then added, And Geordie and Katie need you here. Ollie hesitated but then sank back in his seat with a sigh. For horsewomen of the apocalypse or not, he had responsibilities to attend. Chapter 8.
Och, aye, Ollie was a light-hearted and charming devil, ere the wind he took to the face,
Akir Buchanan assured Jetta.
Went all solemn and quiet afterward, though. I blame that whore, lass.
He corrected himself quickly and rushed on.
That lass he was betrothed to. Tossed him over like a bad ale once he was scarred, she did.
Jetta nodded solemnly.
Mavis told me about Adira.
Hey, Adira,
Uncle Akir said with disgust, and then shook his head and added,
She always seemed such a nice wee lass, but once he was scarred.
Akir's mouth tightened.
Do you know what became of her?
Jetta asked with curiosity. Mavis hadn't said.
Did she ever marry?
Aye.
His mouth twisted angrily.
The wedding was barely cancelled when we got word she'd run off to marry some heir to a marquis or something. She ended up in France, all places, if you can imagine. Probably suits her. The French all think they're better than everyone else anyway, and so did Adira. But then her mother was French, so I suppose she came by it natural-like.
Jetta's eyebrows drew together as she considered what he'd said. His words had twigged something in her memory. Obviously she'd heard this story before from Mavis, at least parts of it. Or she may have heard it all ere her head injury, she thought, and waited briefly for the twig to surface fully enough for her to grab at it. But that small twigging was all she got. Sighing, she let go of it and asked Akir the questions she hadn't thought to ask Mavis.
Then how did my husband and I become betrothed? Did my parents not arrange a betrothal for me at birth, or shortly afterward, as is the custom? I mean, I could not have been betrothed to him from birth if he was already betrothed to Adira. Did my own betrothed die as a child, leaving me available to be betrothed to Ollie?
Uncle Akir glanced around as if for aid, but he and Mavis were the only ones there besides Jetta. All of his men were outside guarding the cabin in shifts, with half standing guard while the other half slept in a small tent they'd set up next to the stables. Uncle Akir himself had taken the second bedroom in the lodge, and Mavis had slept on a pallet in Jetta's room. She had offered the old woman the other half of the bed, not seeing any need for her to sleep on pallets on the cold hard floor, but the maid had refused, insisting she was used to it and wouldn't sleep in the soft, hot bed.
"What's got your attention there, Mavis?"
Uncle Akir asked suddenly, apparently distracted from her question. Jetta followed his gaze to the maid, growing curious herself when she noted the still and alert stance the woman had taken at the window.
"I thought I heard laughing,"
Mavis murmured, not taking her eyes off the scene beyond the open window shutters. Uncle Akir shared a wry smile with Jetta.
"Aye, well, the men do laugh on occasion."
"Nay, no the men. I thought I heard women's laughter,"
Mavis said quietly, obviously still listening.
"Och, 'tis my lady seed."
Jetta's eyes widened with sudden alarm, and she glanced down at the plaid she wore over her shift. She'd woken up before Mavis this morn and had pleated and donned it herself, ere slipping from the room and coming below. Her lack of practice at the task showed. The plaid was crooked, the pleats less than uniform, with one large than the next small, and the next somewhat askew. The whole thing probably looked like a sack-like mess on her, but she hadn't minded when it had just been her, Mavis and Uncle Acre, here. However, now her husband's sister had arrived.
"Oh, dear,"
Jetta murmured, thinking she would embarrass her husband looking so shabby.
"I should..."
"Sit, lass,"
Akir said firmly, when she started to rise, ready to flee to a room.
"Sid was never one to fuss o'er fashion. You look just fine to her."
"Och, look, Lady Murrain and Lady Edith are with her too,"
Mavis said with mounting excitement.
"Niels and Dougal's wives?"
Jetta asked with alarm, recognizing the names from tales Ollie had told her. While he'd obeyed Rory's orders and spoken precious little about their life together, he had told her stories about his childhood and life before her, telling her about his brothers and even how two of them had met their mates, Edith and Murrain.
"They're family, lass,"
Akir said firmly, placing a hand over hers in a way that might be meant to offer support, but also ensured she couldn't flee.
"Murrain and Edith'll no fuss or what you're wearing either."
"And that friend of theirs, Lady Jo Sinclair, is with them too,"
Mavis added with glee.
"And och, look, Dougal, Niels, Greer and Sinclair are all with them as well."
Pausing, she glanced toward the cooking area and said,
"Thank goodness I made those pastries. But I'd best double the rabbit stew I was making for lunch."
Moaning, Jetta closed her eyes as the woman bustled back to the stove. She was contemplating what she feared was her coming humiliation when their guests entered. But then Akir released her hand and said,
"All right then, lass, go on with you."
Breathing out her relief, Jetta stood abruptly and then grabbed at the table when a wave of dizziness rolled over her. Uncle Akir stood at once and scooped her up into his arms.
"You're still not fully recovered, are you, lass?"
"I just stood up too quickly,"
she assured him faintly.
"Huh?"
He grunted.
"I'll take you to your room, but fair warning,"
Akir added as he headed for the stairs.
"The lasses will most likely head straight up to see you once they're in sight, so we're just delaying the inevitable."
"So long as their husbands do not follow,"
Jetta murmured, wrapping her arms around Uncle Akir's shoulders and then offering him a crooked smile.
"What are ye thinking, lass?"
he asked curiously as he carried her up the stairs.
"That looking at you, I see how my husband will look in 20 years. You are remarkably similar in looks to Ollie, as is Rory."
"Eh?"
he grinned.
"'Tis the Buchanan blood. They run strong. All male Buchanans look similar."
"And as Sayd, too?"
she asked curiously, glancing back over his shoulder toward the door below.
"Nay, thank the good Lord," he said dryly. "Buchanan features do not sit well on a female's face, as our poor sister Mairead proved. I love her dearly, but a more unattractive woman I've never seen. Her own betrothed took one look at her face and refused to have her, said it would be like waking up to me in his bed every morn."
Jetta's eyes widened in dismay at this news.
"What happened to Margaret?"
"Oh, she took the veil when her betrothed insulted her so. Said she'd rather be a nun than deal with unfeeling bastard men. Which was a crying shame, if you ask me. She may have looked like another Buchanan lad, but she took after her mother, to be sure. She was sweet-natured and nurturing. She would have made a good wife and mother."
Akir sighed at the memory and then added, more cheerfully,
"Fortunately, our Sayd turned out the opposite.
She inherited her mother's long black hair and good looks, but her father, my brother's personality. She's as pretty as a picture, she is. Just acts like one of the boys instead of looking like him.
Oh, Jetta said weakly, not sure what else to say. The picture Akir had put in her head was of a prettier version of Ollie with black hair and bosoms, stomping around with a sword in hand.
Here we are, Uncle Akir announced cheerfully as he carried her into her bedchamber.
He'd barely stepped inside when they heard the lodge door opening below and the sound of laughter and chatter burst into the small building. Smiling wryly, Akir set her on her feet beside the bed and added,
"And there they are. I'm guessing you have about 2 minutes ere the lassies come bursting in here to see you, so..."
Pausing, he tilted his head and listened at the sudden rush of feet on the stairs. It sounded like a stampede.
"Make that less than a minute,"
he said dryly and moved quickly aside just as several women rushed into the room, tugging a beaming Mavis along with them. Well, tugging and hugging. It looked to Jetta as if they simply swept the women up on entry and passed her around, each hugging and greeting her as they bustled her up to the bedchamber. Now the greetings died and the room fell silent, as 4 women paused to take her in. Jetta peered back, probably looking much like a frightened doe, and then her gaze sought out Mavis. Noting the affection with which the maid was taking it all in, Jetta made herself relax. These were members of her family. Well, 3 of the 4 newcomers were. The 4th was a friend, but she presumed a friend of her too. Else, why would the woman travel all this way? Pasting a welcoming smile to her face, Jetta straightened and surveyed the women. 2 blondes, a redhead and 1 with long, pure black hair. Much like her own, Jetta realized, and smiled faintly at the thought. It was exactly how her husband had described his sister.
"Long black hair, like yours. But hers tends toward being straight, whereas yours has nice waves to it."
"Said,"
she said, smiling at the woman with long black hair, and then turning to the redhead, she said,
"Edith."
And finally she turned her gaze to the 2 blondes and said solemnly,
"And Maureen and Joe."
"You ken who we are?"
Edith asked with surprise. Jetta bit her lip and wrinkled her nose, but then sighed.
"Nay,"
she admitted.
"I mean, if you are asking, do I recall you, I fear not,"
she said apologetically.
"But my sweet Ollie has told me a lot about each of you, so I knew Said has black hair, while yours is red,"
she added to Edith, and then turned to the last 2 women to say,
"He said Maureen and Joe both had blonde hair. So I know you are Maureen and Lady Sinclair, but I'm not sure which of you ladies is Maureen and which is Lady Sinclair."
"Oh,"
Edith murmured, a soft smile curving her lips as she turned to the others and said,
"She called him her sweet Ollie."
"Aye,"
one of the blondes sighed.
"Is that not wonderful?"
Jetta flushed a bit embarrassed, and then glanced to Sade as Ollie's sister moved toward her. When the woman took her in her arms and peered at her solemnly, though, her expression became uncertain.
"Does his scar no bother you?"
Sade asked bluntly. Jetta's eyes widened, but she answered promptly and firmly,
"Nay. Nay."
Sade prodded insistently, and now Jetta frowned as she recalled her earlier worries on the matter.
"Did it bother me ere the accident?"
she asked anxiously.
"Was I unkind or cruel to him about the scar before I lost my memory? Because if I was..."
"If you were,"
Sade prompted when she fell silent.
"Then I was a fool,"
she said sadly.
"My husband is the kindest, most considerate man alive. and the scar does not take away from that. He is handsome. The scar merely adds a rakish air to his good looks. If I was too blind or foolish to see that air hitting my head, then I was a stupid, shallow child.
Much to Jetta's confusion, Sid suddenly beamed and tugged her into a firm hug, saying,
"Welcome, sister,"
as she did. The two of them were then immediately beset by the other three women, all of whom rushed forward to surround and embrace them both as well. Mavis soon joined in too, so that it became just a large pile of hugging and cries of welcome. Confused though she was, Jetta was touched and found her eyes dampening with tears at the acceptance. Before those teardrops could become a waterfall, it ended just as suddenly as it began, and the women all began to pull away, chattering excitedly as they did.
"I will tell the men to have the chests brought up,"
one of the blondes announced firmly, heading for the door.
"I shall fetch me brush. We must do her here ere we take her back,"
the other said, sounding excited.
"I'll order a bath,"
Edith announced, and then glanced to Mavis.
"There is a tub here."
"Aye, aye,"
Mavis headed for the door.
"I'll order the boys to bring it in and fetch water."
"Do not be silly, Mavis,"
Edith said, chasing after her.
"I shall tend that. I did not mean to make more work for you. What is it you're cooking? It smells divine."
"'Tis a fine stew for your noon repast,"
Mavis said proudly.
"Speaking of which, I must double it now that there are so many more here for the meal."
"Well, you tend that while I take care of the bath, then,"
Edith said firmly.
"I'll need more rabbits,"
Mavis said with concern.
"I guess that means I'm going hunting," Akir said dryly, reminding Jetta that he was still there.
Heading for the door now, he added,
"I suppose I'll need enough for lunch and supper too, so I'll take a few of the men with me."
"No need to bother about supper,"
Sid announced, bringing him to a halt at the door.
"We'll all be back at Buchanan by the sup, I should think."
"Really?" he asked with interest. "Does Ollie ken your plan?"
Sid shrugged.
"I'm sure he's guessed I'll bring her back. After all, the only thing keeping her here was her lack of dress. Now we can fix that.
Besides,"
she added with a somewhat sly smile,
"I'm sure the people of Buchanan will be glad to see their laird's wife is alive and well."
Akir grinned at the comment and nodded approval before turning to Jetta and saying,
"The lasses will take good care of you, girl, and their men will be here to stand guard while I'm away hunting up another rabbit. But send one of the soldiers for me. Do you need me?"
"Thank you,"
she whispered. Smiling, he gave her a wink and headed out the door. Jetta watched him go and then glanced to Sid and asked,
"Are we really going to Buchanan today?"
"Aye,"
Sid said firmly.
"I think it's the best thing we can do, under the circumstances."
Jetta nodded solemnly, but taking in the spark of something in the woman's eyes, and suspecting she understood what Sid was hoping would happen, Jetta sighed and cautioned,
"I will be glad to see my husband again. I missed him almost the moment he left. But I hope you are not thinking that being there will help spark some memories in me."
Sid tilted her head and eyed her curiously.
"You do not think it will?"
Jetta shook her head.
"If seeing and being with the man I obviously love dearly did not spark memories, I do not see how a building could."
Sid paused briefly and swallowed, her eyes shimmering with what looked suspiciously like tears, before she asked,
"You love him? How could I not? He is wonderful,"
Jetta said with a wide smile, happy to talk about her husband.
"He cared for me all through my illness with such patience and concern. And truly, every time he kisses or touches me..."
Realizing what she was saying, Jetta paused and was sure by the heat in her face that she was blushing.
Kisses and touches and...
Sid murmured, and then asked delicately,
"You two have no..."
Jetta shook her head quickly, grateful when the woman didn't finish her question. Positive she was now as red as a tomato, Jetta explained,
"Rory insists I should not have excitement of any kind until I am healed. So other than that one time when he..."
Pausing, she swallowed and shivered as she recalled him pleasuring her on the table. After a moment, though, she shook her head and cleared her throat before continuing.
"Well, and that was not the actual bedding or anything, but I was very excited. But Ollie has not done anything like that since because of Rory's orders, I not be excited."
"Ah." Sid grinned in a way that made Jetta sure the woman had a good idea what the, not the actual bedding, had entailed. Tempering her grin now, she asked,
"But you like his kisses and touches?" "Oh, I..."
Jetta admitted on a sigh.
"Ollie is truly wonderful in all ways. I find it hard to believe I was so lucky as to have him as a husband." "But you do," Sid announced firmly, "and I'm going to see it stays that way."
Jetta glanced at her uncertainly.
"See that it stays that way. Here we are."
Edith burst into the room with a parcel of soldiers in tow. As they trudged in with their burdens, she announced,
"The tap and the cold water are here, and there are several pots of water warming over the fire. A few minutes, and they should be ready too. I'll go check on them and tell Greer we plan to return to Buchanan Air day's end,"
Sid announced, hurrying for the door.
"He'll want to send one of the men back to warn Cook, so he kens he has extra mouths to feed."
Jetta watched her go with a frown. She knew from the tales Ollie had told her that Greer was Sid's husband, and she understood that the woman probably did need to let him know they were staying so that the men could prepare to leave rather than settle in here. But she wished Sid would stay so she could question her about the "see it stays that way" bit. The words didn't even make sense to her. Why would Sid need to see it stayed that way? Was there some question that it wouldn't? Was her husband considering setting her aside because of her head injury? Perhaps he didn't like that she couldn't remember him. Perhaps he feared this memory affliction could be passed on to their children when they had them. Dear God, surely he wouldn't set her aside.
"Here we go."
Jetta glanced toward the blonde who entered the room on that announcement. Her eyes widened as she saw the men following the women, carrying chests. She could see three at first, but as the first men entered, she saw more behind them, and it turned out there were six chests in all, each needing two men to carry them.
"What?"
she asked faintly, eyeing the chest with curiosity.
"Dresses,"
Edith announced with excitement.
"Well, most of them have dresses,"
the blonde corrected her.
"There are also two chests of cloth for you to have new gowns made to your taste."
"True,"
Edith agreed with a grin.
"Jo had scads of cloth sent to her by an uncle, and she kindly piled two chests full of it for you."
"Jo,"
Jetta muttered, smiling at the woman, both out of gratitude and because she now knew which blonde was which. Expression sincere, she smiled at the woman and said,
"Thank you. This is so very kind of you."
Her smile fading a bit, she shifted her gaze to the chests as each one was set down and added,
"I could hardly believe it when my husband said all of my belongings had been lost when the ship sank."
When no one commented, she frowned and shifted her gaze back to the women.
"Where were we going?"
"Oh, well,"
Edith hesitated and looked to the other two women as if for help.
I fear we do not ken the answer to that, Murin said quietly. Dougal mentioned that Ollie liked to take a bit of a break this time of year, but I do not recall his saying where he planned to go.
Me neither,
Edith and Joe said at the same time. Jetta frowned with dissatisfaction at that and peered back to the chests as she thought aloud.
It must have been a long break for me to pack every last gown I owned.
She considered that briefly, and then glanced at the two chests that had been in the room since her waking there, and her frown deepened as she added,
And why were Ollie's chests not lost as well? Oh, those chests have been here since they rebuilt the lodge,
Murin said easily.
Rebuilt it?
Jetta asked, and then gave her head a shake as she recalled Ollie telling her about the fire.
Oh, yes. The first one burned down while Dougal was courting you.
Aye, compliments of my cousin and half-brother, Murin said dryly and then shook her own head. Dougal and I offered to pay for the new lodge to be built, but Ollie would no hear of it. Clucking her tongue with something like exasperation, she then added,
Anyway, those chests have been here since the day the lodge was finished. Ollie kept spare plaids and such in them, so he need not drag a lot of cloth and weapons with him when he came to the lodge.
Jetta nodded, but asked,
Why did I not do the same?
The women all exchanged somewhat panicked gazes, and then turned to the door with relief when Sage rushed in, saying,
The water is almost boiled, but I thought while we waited we could go through the dresses and the chests, in case whatever you choose to wear needs airing to let out any wrinkles.
The women seized on the suggestion like it was a bit of water in the desert, all of them talking and moving at once. Jetta soon found her questions pushed from her mind as the women sat upon the chests and began lifting out gown after gown for her consideration. Chapter 9.
I take it from your expression that talking to the men on the wall was no very helpful, Rory commented. Ollie shook his head. Nay, not one of them saw anything of use, he admitted as he dropped to sit at the trestle table next to his brother. They did not see anything at all? Rory asked with a frown. Ollie shrugged. The archer must have been in the cover of the woods. Not one of them realized anything was amiss until Geordi reached back to catch the lass as she started to fall off his mount, and one of them noted the arrow sticking out of her back.
Damn, Rory murmured.
Aye. Ollie agreed grimly, despite it being exactly what he'd expected. While he had feared he wouldn't learn anything useful, there had still been that little bit of hope that he might. Sighing, he caught the eye of a nearby maid and gestured to his brother's ale, and then himself, letting her know he wanted some. As the maid nodded and hurried away, he added, And I sent the men out again to search the woods surrounding the castle, but in a wider area this time. Still nothing. Whoever it was left nothing behind to hint at who they might be.
Rory frowned.
So we have no idea who may have shot the arrow. No idea at all. And no real way to find out unless they make a second attempt. Ollie admitted.
I presume that's why Conran is up in the passage outside Katie's room, Rory asked, in case a second attempt is made.
Ollie glanced at him sharply. How did you ken he was there?
I heard him, Rory said dryly. And I heard who I presume was you last night. The two of you tromp around like bulls.
Grimacing, Ollie nodded. Good to ken. I'll warn him to be quieter and try to be quieter myself.
That is probably for the best, Rory said mildly.
Well, do not mention his being there to anyone, Ollie murmured. As far as everyone here kens, I sent Conran out on a chore.
You're actually hoping whoever it is makes a second attempt, Rory said solemnly.
"'Tis the only way I can think to catch them, and give Katie and Geordie some justice,' Holly admitted. "'If whoever shot her does not make a second attempt, I've no idea where to even start looking.'
Rory nodded. "'I'll make sure there is no reason for anyone to enter the room, not even a maid. If anyone enters, 'twill not be for a good purpose.'
"'Good.' Holly grunted, and then asked, "'How is the lass?'
Rory shook his head, silently.
"'Taking that to mean the lass was alive, but that his brother didn't expect her to remain so for long, Holly rubbed one hand wearily over the back of his neck. He'd intended to ask the question and instruct Rory to say the girl was healing well at the sup last night.' Unfortunately, he'd forgotten until it was too late. By the time he'd recalled talking about that with Conran, Holly had already been installed in the passage outside the room where Katie lay.
Grimacing, he said.
Next time I ask that, I will be in front of a lot of people. When I do, lie and see she's recovering surprisingly well and ye expect her to be up and about soon.
Rory didn't ask for an explanation. Apparently he understood why Holly said that, because he merely nodded. Holly asked next,
"How is Geordie?"
"Stuck to her bedside and praying," Rory said solemnly, and then added, "He's no going to take it well when she finally goes."
"I'll have to think of something to get his mind off her when he passes,"
Holly said quietly. "Mayhap we'll get lucky and Jetta will turn out to have three or four sisters in need of rescuing," Rory said dryly, and when Holly glanced to him in question, he shrugged and pointed out, "Sade has run out of friends in need of rescuing, yet we still have three brothers in need of brides."
"Jetta has at least one sister," Holly informed him. "She recalled that after you left for Buchanan. And we have four brothers in need of brides, not three," Holly corrected him.
"I was considering you already attached, thanks to Jetta's arrival," Rory said with amusement.
"So was I," Holly said dryly. "You're leaving yourself out."
"Oh," his eyes widened. "Well, I dinna need—" Pausing, he frowned and then changed the subject. "Speaking of Jetta, Sade and the girls have arrived at the lodge and are bringing her back today."
"What?"
Holly stared at him with surprise. Rory nodded. "Uncle Kerr sent one of the men ahead with the news so Cook could prepare for the added company for the evening repast. The soldier arrived while you were talking to the men who were standing guard when Katie was shot, so he spoke to me. He said the women are presently bathing and preparing Jetta, but they intended to bring her back in time for the sup."
"Damn," Holly breathed.
"While he wanted her there at his side, and had even known that Sade planned to bring her now that Jetta's arrival was imminent, every single problem that her presence at Buchanan could cause was marching across his mind. Problems like the possibility that someone would tell her they weren't married."
"What the devil is Sade thinking bringing her here?" he said with dismay. "She kens the lass thinks me her husband."
"Aye, well, that may be what she's thinking of," Rory said mildly. "If Jetta arrives and, in front of witnesses here, greets ye by calling ye husband and ye call her wife, or even if ye do not call her wife but do not deny being her husband, you'll be handfasted, brother, as good as married in the eyes of the law." Holly blinked as the words reverberated in his head, and he softly breathed,
Damn. He hadn't thought of that. Just her greeting him could seal her